I'm Stephen Tracy, and this is the Ruling Elder podcast of the Committee on Christian Education of the Orthodox Presbyterian Church. This is a podcast designed to assist in the education, training, and encouragement of ruling elders in their work. Ruling elders are one of God's gifts to His church.
Glad to have Thomas Crumpler join us again on the podcast. Tom is a lawyer and a ruling elder. And the last time we spoke on the podcast, we spoke about sexual abuse. Tom, thanks for joining me on the podcast once again.
My pleasure.
Today we're going to talk about how ruling elders can faithfully and gently shepherd people through the horror of domestic violence or domestic abuse or oppression, as some people call it. It's a very difficult subject, difficult because of the pain and the anguish for people experiencing it. And it's also difficult for ruling elders and sessions because we're not always well prepared to help. This podcast is designed to encourage elders, and we do want to offer help in order to better shepherd Christ's sheep. Let me start with the prevalence of the problem. I recognize that statistics can be misused and misunderstood sometimes, but there appears to be a consensus when I was doing some research. Over one in three women and one in four men in the U.S. have experienced rape, physical violence, and or stalking by an intimate partner during their lifetime. When I rooted a little bit more in the statistics, if we speak only of physical violence, then the statistics seem to be one in four women have experienced physical violence from an intimate partner, and one in seven men have been victims of severe physical violence. There are also statistics for rape, for sexual violence, for stalking, for children experiencing or witnessing these things with their family or within their family. Obviously, it's a significant issue, similar to the problem of child abuse, but it's also different. Tom, what are the differences?
Well, I mean, one difference is that there's various different types of abuse. I mean, I think when we're talking about childhood, it's sexual abuse. I mean, a child can be abused otherwise, too, emotionally, etc. But I think that in terms of, and it's also in terms of this type of abuse, at least as I think we're talking in the podcast, occurs in a marriage relationship to, you know, people who have promised to be intimate and to support each other. Child abuse can be a stranger or someone at the church. So it's a different kind of situation. I also think that every elder who's been on the session any length of time, he's going to be confronted with having to deal with marital abuse. You know, child abuse may happen, but I think it's going to stay in the shadows far longer. I mean, many times a child might be abused and only comes out decades later after he's removed from the abuser. Whereas in terms of spousal abuse, there's a kind of clear and present danger. Many times you learn about it while it's ongoing. So it's a different kind of situation how to deal with.
Obviously, when we're pastoring a flock of God's people and shepherding them, we don't want to be inquisitional. You know, in our visiting of families, the visit is meant to encourage. But do you think there are red flags or certain signs that elders should look out for when they're visiting the flock and dealing with people?
And let me just say, I think one Bible verse, Proverbs 24:11-12 is a good one. It talks of one in terms of rescuing people, which is something that you need to do, but also says, you know, be aware. Be able to watch for that. I think if you know your flock and that you've spent time with them, you're going to realize something is different, is a little odd. I mean, so first and foremost, it's a responsibility to really look after one another. You know, there can be, I'm not the best person in terms of picking up cues. My daughter and my late wife would always remind me of that. But, you know, you can even just notice in terms of body language, how they're sitting together at church and other things. So, I mean, I think one of the biggest things, I think, in terms of this can be somewhere where the elders' wives can really be helpful. I think, even though you do have females who abuse their husbands, I think it's far more common in terms of females who are abused. And I think that the elders' wives may be able to pick that up better. So, I mean, I think that's even something in terms of a responsibility that I think the whole church needs to know. I mean, we are a covenant community. We're supposed to look after each other. So that's an aspect. But many times, I mean, abuse is going to be hidden. I mean, you're not going to necessarily really know about it. And I mean, that's even some of the spouse feels trapped. They're ashamed about it. They still have feelings towards the other spouse. I mean, I think especially in terms of in the Christian context where, you know, divorce, separation are frowned upon. I mean, it's really a grievous distortion of what it should be. And so, you know, the victim may think, hey, it's my fault. I have not done what I should do. I think it's also, too, you know, the concept of male authority and headship is twisted from what it really should be. And I think sometimes the wife may feel in terms of her submission is to grin it and bear it. The husband doesn't understand Ephesians 5, where you're supposed to love the wife as Christ loved the church. I mean, you're basically sacrificing. But I think sometimes, you know, you can almost have abusers think they're kind of justified in their domination biblically, which is totally wrong. But I mean, I think that's a unique aspect, I think, that we in the Christian church have to deal with that you don't have outside of the church. And I think it's also, you know, the witness too. I mean, I think the kind of stereotype is that, you know, in the conservative evangelical church, that's going to be where there's going to be more abuse, which is really not the case. But again, those are those dangers. And I do think, I mean, one thing in terms of the obligation, the teaching elders, but still in terms of really, you know, explaining the roles between husband and wife so that people understand what submission is, you know, what love is. I mean, I think that's something that is misunderstood. And, you know, so almost to kind of prevent abuse to do that. So those are my kind of thoughts.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. I was thinking, though, that in terms of, you know, some of the reasons why churches and elders are sometimes slow to recognize what's happening is because of what you said in terms of understanding headship. And sometimes it's misunderstood, sometimes it's misapplied.
Yeah. And it's also, too, I mean, in terms of, you know, sphere sovereignty, I mean, you know, that we're not a cult. I mean, we respect the family. I think there's a certain sense of, you know, what's the boundaries and, you know, reluctant to go into that. And then also, too, I mean, I think the occasions of abuse occur. You know, often there are two members of the church, and the whole kind of aspect. I mean, it's easier, you know, almost when you hear about childhood sexual abuse of a non-member, the abuser being a non-member, easier to kind of deal with that than when you have a marital unit. So,
yeah. Just as you were speaking there, I was thinking about this. This perhaps is one of the reasons why the subject is so difficult, why many sessions or elders are perhaps slow to recognize what is happening, is because of the subject of headship and submission, because of the subject of misunderstanding that doctrine, biblical doctrine, or misapplying it. I was also thinking about the fact that there have been so many changes in our culture that it seems that this area of marriage and Christian marriage is also something that's under attack. And so I think that's one of the reasons that makes it a very difficult subject. It's difficult on the one hand because this kind of oppression and abuse is horrible. And it's difficult on the other hand, because Christians are trying to discern what does a godly marriage look like, which I think just recognizes the sadness of where we're all at.
I don't think that the headship should be a reason to be reluctant or any kind of excuse. I think the headship is misapplied many times by the abuser, and also the victim doesn't understand it. So it creates a trap and a perfect storm. And so I think the session needs to be aware of just those doctrines can be twisted and misapplied, and we need to be very clear in terms of the message as to what they are. And a message that, you know, that's not a sign of a healthy marriage, and something needs to be done about that. I mean, I think those are messages that need to be done. One, I think the real problem I've always had as an elder is that you just feel so totally inadequate in terms of dealing with this. And you really need prayer and wisdom of other people as to how you deal with that. And I think the other thing is the sense of, you know, sphere sovereignty. I mean, you know, we are covenant church. We look after other children. We look after others in our church. But, you know, the role of raising a child predominantly is the mother and father. And again, that, you know, a good, healthy marriage is really between the two of them. And so you almost kind of think that's, you don't go on a sessional visit and ask, how's your sexual life going on? I mean, there is certain kinds of area of giving people some space and privacy. And so I think that's, and so when you hear about this, even getting a sense, you almost, that there's something going on, you almost want to go into denial. I mean, you don't want to deal with it. I mean, I just think that kind of messiness about that, you know, whenever I hear about that there are marital problems and even non-abuse marital problems, you just get sick to your stomach about it. I mean, they're a couple that you care about and pray about. And I think that's just makes it very difficult. And it's because it's usually when you hear about it, it's an ongoing thing too. And it forces you to take some quick steps, and you're worried about, are you going to make it worse? It's just, there's no easy answers to the whole thing. But at the same point, to do nothing is horrible. I mean, there is that safety aspect of, you know, I mean, there are spouses who are killed because of that, in terms of the anger coming up. So I think you absolutely have to do that. And you have to be careful in terms of how you're doing it so that you do not exacerbate the situation. I mean, one aspect that, you know, we all want marriages to stay together. I mean, nobody wants to counsel someone to separate, you know, that. But if there is really active abuse going on, the safety of the victim requires that separation. So there's just a lot of problems.
And the elders have to be prepared to help. In that case, I mean, a person, we know that a person has to have a safety plan, because that's the most dangerous time, when someone is actually stepping away and taking steps to leave. Do you think that elders need some training in that area, that whole area of recognizing?
Yeah, it should be a subject that once a year or periodically, you know, the elders might just take some time to discuss that. I mean, there are, you know, a bunch of books. Darby Strickland, Is It Abuse, is a very good book. One book that actually in our committee, the abuse committee, we're going to recommend, is a book called When Home Hurts by Jeremy Pierre and Greg Wilson. It's a guide to responding wisely to domestic abuse in your church. Everybody in our group has read through it, finds it a good biblical, wise book that says it doesn't have all the answers, but, you know, has certain thoughts. So I think something like that is a good thing for the whole session maybe to read and discuss. Because when it happens, you don't have time to prepare for it. I mean, you need to kind of give a certain thoughts as to how to do it. So,
what about Brad Hambrick's book or the work that he put together? I think it's called Caring Churches.
Yes, that's another good resource.
Okay, good. We'll make links to these resources available on the notes on the podcast. So,
I mean, one thing. Let me just, I really want to emphasize is, again, the whole safety thing, that when you find out about the abuse, I mean, you need to talk to the victim and really get her permission to do anything. I mean, you might tell her that she needs to take certain action, but you can't force her to do that as an adult. And that's also a difference in terms of, the mandatory reporting. If you know about childhood sex abuse, I mean, in almost every state, you have to report that. Whereas domestic abuse, unless it's certain situations, a disabled adult, an elderly adult, there is no requirement to report that. And in fact, reporting that can sometimes exacerbate the situation. I mean,
make it more dangerous.
Yes.
So I think elders need to learn that sometimes there's a crisis and you have to act during the crisis very quickly. But other times, your pastoral work is long and slow, walking alongside all the people involved.
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, I mean, if it's not an emergency situation, is to spend time, with the victim and again, show that you care about her and you're willing to do everything possible with her. I think often it's wise to have a female with you at that particular time because, again, we talk in terms of headship and authority. Sometimes a victim in a Christian context being abused by a man is going to be reluctant to deal with men at that point, too. So I think many times it's wise to have in that original time an elder's wife or another woman in the church who is close to the victim to really help them out. And then when do you confront the abuser? You only do that if the victim has given you permission to do that, and that's something that very kind of clear. And then the whole kind of question of, church discipline, letting the church know. Again, you don't do letting the church know without the victim's okay on that whole thing.
I think that there's two different things that happen. Sometimes elders just become aware that things are not right. Well, we talked earlier, the kinds of sign language and a sense of fear or anger or shame or just, someone overwhelmed. But there are other times when the victim of the abuse and the oppression comes and tells you. So those are like two different scenarios, and the pastoral response to both will depend on them. On the circumstances. But when someone comes to tell you that there's been abuse in the home or oppression in the home, how do elders respond to those allegations at that time? Like, how do you follow up in order to check? You believe the person telling you, but you still have to then follow up and find out what's been
happening. I mean, you hear that first. I mean, you really need to take, can we talk to your husband or about the other spouse about that and deal with it? And to find out, is it an immediate physical safety situation? And let me put an area of caution that sometimes I can just look in terms of our own church. We have someone coming forth and talking about abuse. And many times it's not physical abuse. They say, it's emotional abuse. It's this. And certainly you can have very clear emotional abuse. But in hindsight, sometimes I've seen a spouse almost wanting to get justification for a divorce. And sometimes, I mean, it wasn't a perfect marriage, but she's almost trying to set up the stage to get permission to leave her husband and do a divorce. So, I mean, that's an area. And I say that reluctantly because I think you need to give the victim the benefit of the doubt. I mean, it's not our job to, we're not a court to decide, other than if we become an ecclesiastical court in terms of what's going on. But that's an issue, too, that I've seen in terms of where there are problems in marriage, but it's being twisted a little bit to one side or another.
Yeah. You're not saying that there's no such thing as emotional abuse.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's also, that's a fundamental mistake to only say that the only kind of spousal abuse is physical abuse. I mean, the emotional abuse can be as devastating, if not more devastating.
And so it's part of our pastoral practice to try to determine as best we can just what exactly is happening.
Right. And you know, even if you talk in terms of, I mean, there is even, you know, sexual abuse too. I mean, that sexual relation should be consensual, even in marriage situation. And that's many times, unfortunately, a component of abuse that's going on. Mm-hmm. And you know, and really, what is abuse? I mean, what is the subjection? Really, an oppression of one partner over the other, and it really is a total abandonment of the marital relationship.
Do you think that sessions, and ruling elders, do you think they should have a clear process already in place as to how they're going to act if someone comes to them with allegations of violence or oppression, or should a session just treat each case as it comes along and its own merits?
You can come up with a plan or a policy. I mean, I think that's nothing wrong with that, but you have to realize that each case is going to be different. I mean, I think definitely a session needs to brainstorm, hey, how would we deal with this?
Yeah.
And at least have certain kind of general consensus. Whether you do it as a written plan or not, I could go either way. I mean, I think certainly in a perfect world, coming out with a particular plan how to do it is fine, as long as you realize that that's just a starting point. But the real thing is got to be that you realize that there can be emergency situations. I mean, that you have to, you know, what you said, the difference between something has to be done right away versus the long-term aspect. And I think really it's the emergency situations that maybe there should be a certain plan as to what to do, because it just makes it easier. You don't have to spend time deliberating over it. There are resources. I mean, there are places where the spouse can go necessary, if not within the church. And then there's a whole problem that you have to think about is the children too, how you deal with them, because they are victims of the abuse too, victims in the sense of the fact that the marriage is there. And another aspect is if you find out that there is, and especially physical abuse in a marriage, you have to raise the question, is the abuser abusing the children too? And other people in the family too. So you have somebody who has a temper, has issues, it may not just be the spouse.
Yeah. I remember many years ago, I was a visiting preacher somewhere. I was having lunch with the family around the table. One of the children knocked over their glass of water, and the whole table of the family around that table froze and I saw everybody's eyes go straight to the Father. And I thought to myself, oh, something's not right here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that in that case, there was severe anger and everybody expected it. And I think that because I was there, it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. But had I not been there, I think the anger would have come out. So, that abusiveness towards a spouse often spills to the rest of the family. They may receive it or even witness it, which is, it just adds to our pastoral work.
Right.
When should we call in help? And what help should we call in? Should ruling elders talk to domestic violence advocates? Should we get to know domestic violence advocates in our community? It so happens that I do know a very good one, and that's very helpful to me as a pastor. When should we call in help like that? Or when do we call in counselors, law enforcement? What are your thoughts on getting help from outside?
Well, I mean, again, there's no easy 1, 2, 3 situation. You have to use some wisdom. But I do think it is, just as you mentioned, should sessions have discussed how to deal with it? Yes, they should. And I think sessions also should have names of Christian counselors, resource people. So that, because I said earlier, this is an area that I think most elders, pastors, have had training in terms of counseling it, but an awful lot of men who are on the session are not the best counselors. It's, and so they need that resource and to know really from those people, when should the person get that help? One thing in terms of counseling that I think is important, that if there's abuse going on, the marriage is in trouble. But it's not time at that point immediately for marriage counseling. The time is to try to stop the abuse and get the abuser to recognize that he or she was wrong and repent of it. And then after that, so that problem has at least been put aside, marriage counseling. But even the whole idea of marriage counseling is kind of saying it's both sides' fault. When I say both sides' fault, I think many times the abuse victim may worry that the counselor, he's going to turn things on her, say, I did it because of this or that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I was going to say that sometimes the difficulty as elders in dealing with the abusive party in the marriage is that person is very skilled at being manipulative and is very skilled at creating the aura around themselves. And as elders, it takes time to get through and penetrate that skin and that shield that's been put up. So that, they may say they repent, but we have to look for the fruit of that repentance. It's just a longer process often.
Right. It is a very difficult area. It's an area that I think elders should expect that they're going to confront it and they should be prepared for it. But when it happens, you got to get down on your knees. We need prayer for everything, but I just think the elders should feel really inadequate in dealing with it. Because it is a problem, and it gives such grief too. It's part of the family that you see happening. So it's not an easy thing at all.
Thanks, Tom. That's excellent. I want to come back to the question of divorce, because this is a difficult question. And when divorces take place, sometimes they're not as straightforward as we all would like them to be. They're not textbook cases that you can argue in seminary. Real life is always a little bit more messy. So in terms of divorce and in terms of church discipline, the biblical grounds for divorce, according to the Confession of Faith, and our understanding is if there's been adultery and there's been desertion,
right,
by one party,
Yeah, and we've had the whole kind of question of desertion or abandonment. I mean, you know, you can see a abuser whose wife leaves him for, you know, separated because of abuse, saying, she's the one responsible for me. Give me a biblical divorce, you know, which is totally turning everything on its head.
Or discipline her.
Right.
For leaving.
Right.
That's how that will happen. So how do we respond to that?
Well, I mean, one, if there is systematic abuse, I mean, to me, it's a destruction of the marital relationship. It's an abandon. I mean, the abuser has deserted the marriage.
Got
I
it.
Mean, physically, he may still be there, but it's no longer a marriage. And it's certainly not a biblical marriage. He is not loving his wife, not having a situation that makes it easy for her to submit to him. The abuse is an act of destroying the marriage. Now, it doesn't mean that it can't be corrected any more than infidelity cannot be repented and marriage still go forward, or desertion. But I think it is, prima facie abandonment. That's my view. Now, again, it is kind of a question of a one-time physical abuse. And one time is one time too many, you know, a very emotional verbal abuse. Again, one time too many. Does that constitute abandonment? I don't think so. I mean, but again, there are no black and white kind of rules on this. And that's something that, I mean, I can say that as a session where we've had a situation where it's been verbal abuse and emotional manipulation, which I agree with you can be as bad as physical, but it's sometimes difficult to understand because you're not there. I mean, I think you can understand physical abuse much easier.
Yeah, but I think as elders, what you said at the very beginning, if we're involved in the lives of our people and we know the sheep, then we will already be beginning to see the signs of something that's just not healthy, that troubles us. We may not be able to put our finger on it, but the more we know the people in our flock, the more we're able to shepherd them.
And it could even be children, too, that you understand something's going on, too. And there's that role in terms of they are part of the family. I mean, it's almost like, you know, you've got your brother and your sister's marriage, and you're concerned about that, too. But there's a different level of your knowledge and involvement than your own family.
And a good, healthy congregation will pick up the cues that a marriage is in trouble. And eventually they'll pass that along to the elders. But I think you're right. And I think that we need to train our congregations to help one another. That's part of the work of the elders, I think, too, is to train the congregation to be of help to one another.
I mean, you know, it is one thing I frequently, as I'm in my elderly age, I think I'm looking forward to the marriage feast of the Lamb. But, you know, what I realize that it's the bridegroom of Christ. It's the church that is the bridegroom. I mean, we're all together a part of this. And I think that unity of the body is something that many Christians, again, in our individualistic age, don't think about. And we have a responsibility towards each other.
Right. Brothers and sisters, you'd be saying to people that are struggling, you're not on your own.
Right.
You're not alone here. We're here to help. I liked what Craig Troxell said in the very first podcast that we had. He talked about having workshop for his elders. And I think this is a subject that would be a great workshop day for elders. I think that it needs to be thought about and talked about and prepared for, because it's happening. It's not just that we're looking at something that might be coming down the road. This is something that has been happening and is happening and does happen in our churches.
And in fact, you mentioned in terms of resource personnel, I think one thing our session did a number of years ago is we invited a counselor to come and basically explain to us the abuse situation and how to deal with it. I mean, someone who deals with it on a professional basis. So I think that was very helpful too. And I think, yeah, that's easy enough. Every single session should be able, one, you need that person, but what better way to establish a relationship is having that person come for a one-day seminar.
Yeah. Excellent. We can't cover everything in this brief podcast, but we can make sure that we help and encourage ruling elders that this is a frightening thing to deal with, but that this is also part of our call, and that we have to help those who are being oppressed. We have to care, and we have to use and exercise wisdom and pray for the gifts of the Holy Spirit. What do you want, if you were to wrap up, Tom, what would you want to say to ruling elders in the Orthodox Presbyterian Church and in other churches that may be listening to the podcast?
Our responsibility is towards our flock. I mean, it talks about we're going to be giving an account for how we've done that. And first and foremost is their spiritual health. But abuse can destroy their spiritual health. It is a responsibility that we have. I mean, it's much easier for us to say, how's your family devotions and your prayer life when we do visits? And the question of, you don't ask, how's your marriage going, etc. But you need to be inquiring about that in a nonverbal way. You need to be able to pick that up. And giving the sense of, I really think, a loving congregation, that people care for each other. One problem is victims of abuse, they're scared and they don't know where to turn to. And shame on us if they don't immediately turn to somebody in the church.
Yeah, I was just reading in Galatians 6 and verse 2, that verse that reminds us to bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ.
Right.
Pray that God gives us grace to do that. Tom, thanks so much. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, even when it's such difficult things as this, your vast experience as a ruling elder and as a lawyer that's had to walk all these difficult paths. It's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for your contribution today.
And let me just say, I'm not an expert. I'm just somebody who, meanders through this. And it's something we all have humility, and by God's grace, we can do it.